Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville in association with DraftKings.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Patty Pigskin. As always, I'm Gary Somerville. We got a very special guest on this week's show. Her name is Santia Deck, aka the Queen of Abs. She is an all-round beast. She played in the Legends Football League. She's now back playing rugby, and as well as being an absolute workout animal, she's hoping to make the Olympic squad for the USA in the 2020 Olympics. So Santia kindly took time out of her very, very busy schedule to talk to myself and Barry. Also on the show, we just did our 2018 Paddy Pigskin League NFL fantasy football draft. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Myself and Barry are going to chat about how we did, what we thought of the players we drafted, and just a little bit about draft fantasy strategy in general. So really good episode this week. Fantastic guest. Stay tuned for all of that fantastic stuff on this week's episode of Paddy Pigskin. Let's go. Episode 39 is for legendary fullback and the man with a fantastic moustache, Larry Zonka. He was born in Stowe, Ohio in 1946. He played D end at first, but became a tailback accidentally when he returned a kickoff for a massive run. He went to play at Syracuse as a middle linebacker, but he then switched to become an All-American fullback, and he was enshrined into the College Football Hall of Fame for his efforts at Syracuse. In the 1968 Common Draft, Zonka became the first running back off the board with the 8th overall pick by the AFL's Miami Dolphins. He played 7 seasons with Miami, winning a ring and the game MVP in 2 consecutive Super Bowls, Super Bowl VII versus the Redskins and Super Bowl VIII versus the Vikings. He went to 5 Pro Bowls with the Dolphins and also played 3 seasons with my New York Giants from 1976 to 78. He retired as a Dolphin in 1979, and his number 39 jersey is retired in the organization. Stats-wise, he had 8,081 rush yards, 64 rushing touchdowns, and even though he was a fullback, he had 820 reception yards and 4 reception touchdowns. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1987 and is a member of the NFL Films Super Bowl Dream Team. So, episode 39, legendary fullback Larry Zonka. This episode is for you. So, let's get on to this week's guest, which is Santia Deck, aka the Queen of Abs. Let's get after it.
When we touch down,
can I feel where's we okay? Everybody know them Southern boys love that bass.
Atlanta go bananas, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee Keys, every motherfucking state. When we touch down,
go right from the plane to the rain.
When we touch down,
on a private plane, getting brain till we
touch down. Hey. There ain't no way to keep them quiet with T.I. and Shady, baby. Hey. We bout to inside a ride when we touch down.
When we get in town, you know how we getting down. Pull up clean and hop on out. Snatch all the freaks and walk on out. I'm living what they talking about. I'm shining if it dark or not. That 100EX double all you're finding in the parking lot. You barking up the wrong tree. I do this shit for zone 3, 4, 5, and 6. And well, it's 1 in Lima. I'm forever, son. Still be on whatever coat. Brian blowing heavy smoke. AM, you better tell them. 4 won't hesitate to let them go. They know I put that green light on them haters. Keep on trying me. I put that bean right on your tailor. And you don't want to see T.I.P.E.R.A. Just try to keep them in a cage. What's a high key?
So our very special guest on this week's episode of Paddy Pigskin is Santia Deck, aka Queen of the Abs. Santia, thanks very much for taking time out to chat to us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, guys.
So for people that may not know who you are, we'd like to, you know, go over your background a little bit. So you were a track and field star at Texas A&M, right?
Yes, I ran track from my freshman year to my senior year, and I got a full ride. So I was actually very blessed.
Okay, and what events did you do? Did you have a particular speciality there at Texas A&M?
So I ran the 100, 200, and 4x1. I was considered like a sprint specialist, but I sometimes ran the 4x4, but I was always hiding when they tried to call me for that. So it wasn't my favorite event.
Okay, and you also played in the Legends Football League. You played for the Atlanta Steam, right?
Yes.
So we've actually interviewed a Legends Football League player on this show before. We spoke to, you may know her, Jessica Hopkins, who played for the Seattle Mist.
Oh, yeah. I definitely know her. Yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah, she was fantastic. So you may not know, but the Legends Football League tried to start up in Europe a couple of years ago. And myself, along with some other guys back in Ireland, were tasked with getting a franchise up off the ground there. Unfortunately, it wasn't too successful. But can you tell us how you got into the Legends Football League and what kind of started your love for football in general?
Yeah, so it was actually a really funny story with Legends Football. I actually was playing flag football shortly after I had graduated from college. And I actually ended up getting recruited by the USA rugby team because they seen a few of my clips through a few of my social media channels, I believe Instagram. So they reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you like to possibly be a part of the USA Olympic team for rugby?" And I was like, "Yeah, but I don't really know too much about rugby. And I never played." And he was like, "Oh, that's fine. We'll teach you. We'll coach you up. It's not too hard. You're fast. So that's all that really matters." And I was like, "Okay." So literally the next week, they flew me out to California to the Olympic Center. I got off the plane. While I was on my way to the Olympic Center, the coach actually got fired that recruited me.
Oh, my gosh.
The new coach that came in, she had completely different plans. She was a little rude to me. She was like, "Why are you here?" I was like, "Hey, I was just recruited. Jeez. I'm fast. That's all I know." And she was like, "Well, I have different plans. So once you know how to play, you know, you can come back and we'll give you another chance." So I was really disappointed. I didn't really understand why that happened. But on the way back to Atlanta, I got a call from the LFL coach. And he was like, "Hey, I see your clips on social media. You're really fast. Would you like to come out to our tryouts and try out for LFL?" And I was like, "Okay, sure." So when I got back that weekend, I ended up trying out and I made the team.
Nice.
And that's how it kind of happened.
Were you the only girl on the Olympic, tryout squad, for want of a better name? Were you the only one that had no rugby experience prior to that? Or were there one or two other just all-around athletes that felt that they could, you know, coach them up and be better rugby players?
Oh, I was the only one. I was literally the lost lamb.
Because
it was very embarrassing.
So a lot of our listeners, people that played football in Ireland, they would have started off the other way. They would have played a lot of rugby and then they've had to try to, you know, transition their skill sets into American football. Did you find did your skills translate well into rugby, or did you find it was a little bit of a steep learning curve just to get used to the ins and outs of the sport?
I can say the athletic part of rugby I've done like exceptional, but just learning the rules has been very difficult for me because coming from football, you know, the rules are very simple and it's not too complicated and you don't have to pass backwards. So just learning how to actually use the technique and stuff and kind of get rid of the old, you know, football, you know, I guess skills or whatever that I have. That kind of has been the challenge in the endurance. I'm not used to having to run back and forth and back and forth while being tackled at the same time. So my endurance isn't the best, you know, when it comes to that.
I was going to say, it's definitely a different level of fitness because, you know, you're running in rugby, it's two halves of 40 minutes. So you really are working for 40 minutes without much of a break. That's definitely one of the steep learning curves that anybody has coming from football to rugby. But, you know, Nate Ebner, he's another famous rugby transition player here for the New England Patriots. He went on to represent the USA in the Olympics there 2 years ago. So it's definitely possible for people that come from a football background to excel in rugby.
Yeah. So how did that transition actually happen, though? So when you went from the LFL and now you're back into rugby, though, like, was it that you really did get to learn the ropes and now you're kind of back? Or what was that transition like for you?
So when I finished with LFL, I continued playing flag football, and I decided to get into rugby because everybody, first of all, they were tagging me on like almost any, I guess, viral rugby video, and they're like, "This should be you. This should be you. You should be playing." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, you know what? This has been happening for like the past 2 years, so maybe I should just try." And she did say, "If I learn, then maybe I have a chance." So I just found a coach kind of through LinkedIn, social media again. And he was like, "Yeah, come out. You know, you can just learn with us." And I played with the guys for a little bit. And then I finally played with the Harlequins out here.
Yeah.
And I've only been playing for about, I guess, a total of 6 months or a little less than 6 months. And I've had two tournaments already. I've already scored 4 tries. I had some pretty good tackles. there's teams internationally that's already looking at me. So, I mean, it's been pretty crazy, to say the least.
Is it 15 v 15? Is it full squads? Or is it, you know, the rugby sevens now is really becoming popular since its inception into the Olympics now. There's a lot of big rugby seven tournaments. I think the faster game seems to have attracted a new crowd because a lot of the set pieces, like, you know, from playing like scrums and lineouts and stuff like that, it kind of eliminates some of the points in the game where it's actually slowed down. So is it sevens you're playing or full 15?
So I'm playing sevens right now, but I actually might start playing 15s next week. So we'll see.
Best of luck with that.
Thank you.
So one big thing we want to kind of talk about is obviously we have just delved into this huge background of obviously all of the amazing sports achievements you've had. But I think one thing that when we talked before this that really struck me, and I think one thing the listeners would find really interesting here, is that you actually grew up with scoliosis, as you told me.
Yes.
And a big thing was that you were told at an early age that you couldn't play sports. So can you kind of talk us through, first of all, finding that out and kind of transitioning to why did you continue like to play sports almost in spite of that? And then, you know, what was the love of sports that really made you want to keep pushing to that sense to where you did track, but not only that, you went to the whole next step and went to full contact sports too, which
right.
with scoliosis would seem to pose even more of a threat.
Right. Well, so the story with my scoliosis, it was actually missed by my doctor when I was, I believe I was 9 or 10. And my sister, she was actually getting married. So, you know how you have to go get your dress fitted, you have to get, you know, your measurements. And the lady, you know, she actually had asked my mom, hey, do you know your daughter? She has like a curvature and there's like one side of her body is longer than the other one. And my mom was like, no, I never heard that from any of her doctors. And she was like, yeah, she definitely has scoliosis. So of course my mom was very mad at the doctor because he definitely could have, I guess, saved, you know, me from having to deal with scoliosis because it could have been corrected. But I guess he missed it. And so when we went to actually get, you know, the checkup or whatever, he was telling my mom, like, hey, like, you know, I'm a parent, you know, this, her curve is pretty bad. And if I were you, I wouldn't put her in any sports because if she gets hit the wrong way or if, you know, she continues to, you know, play sports, there could be, you know, some damage done that you can't, you know, fix. And he was like, I would suggest you get surgery and get a rod put in her back and, you know, just continue with life that way.
Horrible.
My mom at that time, yeah, my mom was crying and, you know, I'm like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, she was like, hey, you know, let me just think about this because my daughter, she runs track, she played tennis, you know, so this would kind of devastate her if she couldn't do that anymore because I love track. So she prayed about it and then she ended up telling the doctor that she felt like I would be fine. You know, she heard God, you know, she felt like God spoke to her that night and, you know, I had adjusted to it already. I mean, I was running track and I wasn't in pain. So she said, I think she'll be fine. And, you know, I believe in her abilities and she wants to go to the Olympics, you know, so I'm going to pass. The doctor wasn't happy about it, but he just, you know, of course, he couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, you know, I continued running track. I started playing basketball a little bit after that. Then I got into, you know, I went to college for track, tried to go pro, but I got injured. And then I got into football and rugby. So, I mean, my body adjusted to it, you know, miraculously, and I don't have any severe pains. I might have spasms here and there, but that's about it. You know, I was very blessed.
Was there any adjustments you would have had to make in your training regime, you know, compared to your peers that were competing in the same events? Were you able to do all the same things they were doing, or did you slightly have to adjust your training program because of what you had going on?
Oh, no. Honestly, I've always done more than the regular person, to be honest. I was always stronger.
Okay.
No, I mean, and that makes complete sense because also the other point of that is just like, you know, it makes complete sense that you also had to like, you know, have that extra power helped, you know, one, just with the speed and the athleticism, but two, I can imagine almost helped with your body adjusting to that as well.
Exactly.
So you've mentioned that you've overcome this and you said you had to work harder and now this seems to roll into your really big social media presence, your fitness site and Queen of Abs on Instagram, which I think the last time I checked you're up at 234,000 followers or something like that, which is quite the large following on Instagram.
Thank you.
So how did you kind of get into promoting yourself as a fitness brand as well as being, you know, an athlete in all these different sports? You seem to have a really massive platform now in the fitness arena. Was that sort of something that kind of progressed naturally, or did you have that goal in mind that you wanted to really kind of incorporate this into social media?
So with social media, it actually kind of came randomly because I was actually late getting on Instagram. All my friends were on there probably like a year or two before I even got on there. And I just thought it was stupid. You know, I was still really big with the Facebook and everything, so I wasn't really too interested in it. But then, you know, somebody was like, hey, you should just get on here. You know, you can post pictures and different things like that. And, you know, one of my friends said, you know, I bet you couldn't get more followers than me. And I'm a very competitive person. So I was like, okay, challenge accepted. So I just started posting selfies and me working out like at college, like when we did our workouts. Mm-hmm. And from there, I just started gaining a lot of fans because, you know, I would do crazy stuff all the time. That's what I was known for in the beginning, just doing crazy workouts. And people just were like, oh my gosh, your abs are crazy. I've never seen a girl with abs that defined that still looks feminine. And I was just like, oh, okay. So one day I went home, you know, for college break, and my mom was like, you know, we should really brand your abs. And I was like, okay, what about princess abs? And she was like, why be a princess when you can be a queen?
It's a pretty fair slogan in life. From there,
I got Queen of Abs, and yeah, it just kind of took off from there.
Is there now a Princess of Abs that is trying to steal your thunder, or have you exclusively kind of cornered the ab market, or is there a couple of
single throw
imposters? Have you got it all closed off yourself?
I've never really had anybody that I know that's popular that has that name. So I think I'm pretty good with it.
You're talking to two guys here every now and then. Well, actually, every episode, apart from this one. Whenever we talk football, we always review a beer. So we're not the most gifted athletic specimens on the planet. So have you got some good ab workouts that myself and Barry may be able to incorporate into our workout regime going forward?
Yeah, definitely. I have a lot, actually.
So, Barry?
Yeah, no. So I think one of the things that's like really interesting is we've been talking about, you know, obviously you as an athlete is obviously just like with so many other athletes, the interest from a lot of fans comes not only from what you do on the field and what you've done to where we can connect with you over social media, but also what you do for the community. And for you, a big part of that is obviously giving back and trying to be giving more opportunities for girls going forward for sports. So your charity, and correct me if there's another one that we're not mentioning here, but Girls Can Do It Too, is a mm-hmm. big opportunity that I know we had talked about how you're trying to open up the next kind of like opportunities for girls growing up. And just want to get a sense from you of kind of like, you know, were there some people growing up who really helped you along your journey where, you know, as a girl, maybe it's harder to break into certain parts?
Well, so my upbringing was actually very, very rare. And I'm not going to say super rare because of course there's girls that grow with brothers and different things like that. Mm-hmm. But, I had a twin brother, and we were honestly abnormally athletic. We went to the doctor at 2. The doctor actually asked my mom, were we on steroids because she was so developed?
And, it's a question that we have never gotten once in our life.
No, but yeah, so I mean, and my mom was like, no, my kids are just, they're just muscular. So we were always very strong and just, like I said, abnormally just athletically gifted. And so for me, having a twin brother, I always had a workout buddy. So when girls were at home, you know, doing girl stuff, I would be outside with my brothers. I had 3 brothers that I grew up with, and I'll be out there catching the football, playing basketball, tackling my brother, doing footwork drills and different things like that. And I think that's what separated me and made me the type of athlete that I am today, because that's something that I noticed. Girls do not have any like agility until they're like in high school. They don't even know how to do ladder drills barely when they're in high school. And so for me, I was doing ladder drills when I was like 4. So jeez. I was always like outdoing boys and tackling. Like I was always embarrassing boys. That was like what I was known for. And so now that I'm older, I'm like, you know what? Why weren't there any like camps, you know, like speed camps or, you know, athletic camps for girls in the summer? Because guys, they have like football camps, soccer camps, you know, whatever. But it always said girls are welcome, or girls can come too, or it will be only boys. And so I'm like, okay, why is there never any camps for girls? Why aren't there any summer, you know, programs for girls to develop to become better athletes so they have a higher chance at getting an athletic scholarship? And I was just lucky because my mom, even if it said boys only, my mom was like, okay, well, she has a twin brother, so she's going to do what he's doing. That's how my mom was. And so I was just a lucky one. But, you know, a lot of girls, they don't have that. And so I felt like, okay, let me actually set up a foundation where I go across the world, you know, not just where I'm at, you know, in the U.S., but across the world, and set up camps for these young girls to develop their skills at a young age, so that they have a better chance at reaching the highest level, you know, whether that's pro or college or high school, whatever their goals are, but so that they're not behind. They're actually ahead of the, you know, the curve or whatever. And also I'm going to have professional female athletes come and talk to these young girls about, hey, this is what you need to do when you want to go to the next level. This is what you need to avoid when you want to go to the next level. Because as girl, you know, as women, we have different, you know, obstacles. We have to think about, you know, getting pregnant, gaining extra weight that we don't know where it came from. Our body's changing. So it's like, if you had somebody that went to the Olympics or was a WNBA player or whatever, and they could tell you, hey, this is exactly what I did, and this is what you need to do to get to where I'm at.
Yeah.
I think that would help a lot of girls, because I never had that. My brother, he would be like, oh, mom, guess who came to my school today? Barry Sanders. I'm not saying he came, but, you know, I'm just saying, like, somebody.
I was about to say, that sounds NFL amazing. Players, yeah.
I know, right? But all these ex-NFL athletes or ex-MLB, you know, athletes or whatever, and they would tell them, like, hey, bro, this is what we did to get here. But for us, we never had any. I can't remember one time a female athlete came and spoke to us.
Was there an athlete growing up that, like, you also, like, I know that there's a big push there with the twin brother that obviously helps with all this, but was there an athlete, male or female, who you really looked up to as, like, that kind of idol growing up when, like, it gave you that push of, like, I want to be like them?
Definitely FloJo, the track runner.
Yeah.
She was, like, I was obsessed with her. Literally, that's why I started wearing my socks, like, how I wore them. They don't match. So, yeah, she definitely was somebody that I always tried to, you know, aspire to be like, and she was just amazing. I never seen anybody like that.
And so when you do these, correct me if I'm wrong, you haven't been abroad yet you haven't done these camps overseas yet, have you?
Not yet.
So is it going to be a case where you just teach these girls kind of a generic skill set that can be applied to different sports, or will you specialize in, you know, if a girl is showing particular interest in becoming a basketball player, there's very specific drills for that, or tennis, or whatever other sport they're interested in?
I think for now, we're going to just do, like, the basic drills that whatever sports you're in, you need. And then as it gets bigger and we get more ladies involved, we'll have, like, WNBA players come and, you know, specifically work with the basketball players, or ex-Olympians come and work with the track runners, you know.
Yeah.
But I definitely just want to start off with the basics, because, again, a lot of girls don't even have that. So you can't... You don't have the basics, there's really nothing else you can do.
Sure, yeah. And speaking of women in professional sports, just touching on football a little bit, the Raiders now have Kelsey Martinez, who's the first female strength and conditioning coach in the NFL. Do you see, like, is the role of women, I know there's a lot of women involved in front office roles, but on the field, the daily interaction with players, not as much. Do you see now that, you know, someone like Kelsey, who's on an NFL coaching roster, do you see this is kind of opening up that window for women to become more involved in the actual physical side of the NFL as opposed to the administration side?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually amazing to see women actually, you know, getting these huge roles, because obviously a few years ago, it wasn't even a thought. So it's definitely letting me know that there is progression being made with these, you know, these sports and everything. And I just hope that it continues. And, you know, I hope that they eventually start giving us equal pay as athletes, and, you know, giving us, even if we could, a woman could be a head coach. I mean, I feel like some women probably know the game better or just as good as some of these guys. So I just hope that the roles continue to grow, and, you know, that the world just continues to change and allow women to have equal opportunity on the field and off the field.
Yeah, and you got to look at the LFL is actually a good example, because an ex-Seattle Mist player, Danica Brace, you're probably well aware of her. She just started the Nashville Knights, I think they're called, the new franchise there in Tennessee. And she's been working wonders as the head coach there. So even when I spoke to Jessica Hopkins last year, it was summer last year, there wasn't even a coach on a regular season NFL roster. So we're definitely making strides in that regard in the space of a year. Now we have a female strength and conditioning coach in the NFL. So definitely making some improvements there. Speaking of charities, so we mentioned that you have Girls Can Do It Too. I also saw on your Instagram a couple of days ago, you've been getting involved in the Cancer Heroes, which is a charity which is involved in childhood cancer awareness. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, they actually had reached out to me and they know that I'm really into the youth. So they had asked about, you know, me just kind of helping to promote their charity and get some, you know, grab some attention so that people can either donate or support. And I actually lost my best friend in college to cancer. And that was actually probably one of the most difficult times of my life because, you know, he was like literally like my brother. Mm. And so I do know like how devastating cancer is and how quickly it literally changes everybody's life. So when I think about children who don't even have life experience yet, you know, that just obviously breaks my heart. So anything that I can do to support the youth and empower the youth and do something to make a child's life better, I'm always going to be a part of it. So with this charity, they're pretty much, again, raising awareness, and they're trying to pretty much create a campaign so that it can allow these kids who have, like, you know, some of the medical care taken care of and some of the facilities that they stay in, you know, that can be paid for. It's just so many different things that would help a family that has a young child that's, you know, fighting this horrendous disease. That's kind of what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, raising awareness.
That's fantastic. And my real job is actually a cancer research scientist here in Boston. So I know firsthand how important funding like this is, especially for childhood cancers. Being right next to Boston Children's, you know, I kind of see it on a daily basis that a lot of these kids are coming in for serious treatments, and a lot of Irish kids actually come over here from Ireland. The treatment is so expensive. I see these GoFundMe pages all the time, and some of them are like $100,000 or more just to get these kids on clinical trials. So it's fantastic that you're getting involved with this charity. Is there a particular website that people can check it out? Or I know they have an Instagram page, right? The Cancer Heroes.
Yeah, I believe it's thecancerheroes.org is the website. I have to double check. It might be .com.
I'll put it in the the episode description anyway.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And I guess the one thing we kind of want to wrap up on is the idea that, you know, there's so much that you've done to this point with sports, the charity impacts, but we really want to understand for you kind of what are the next goals that you see both within sports and obviously at some time beyond them?
Oh, man, I have honestly so many different goals. It's kind of hard to even to say which ones. But the ultimate goal for me is just to continue to be a positive role model for everybody, children, women, men, everybody. And just continue to be like, you know, light in the darkness, because there's so many different, you know, things going on that aren't so good and, you know, aren't so positive. And I try to just always, you know, keep people, happy, smiling, empowered. And I just want to continue doing that just on a larger scale. And, of course, athletically, I hope that I can make a Olympic team for rugby. And for just, like, my social media, I just want to, again, continue to grow my platform, continue to get, you know, opportunities to just become a bigger influencer and just continue to use my platform for good. You know, that's the ultimate goal. Just spread awareness as much as I can.
Well, Santi, I think it's pretty obvious you have two pretty large supporters here in us. But one thing we wanted to do before we kind of finish off is, I know a lot of our listeners at this point are very interested in just a variety of different things you're doing. What are the easiest ways that they can follow you? So, you know, give us some plugs here for you.
Okay, so my Instagram is trackbaby001. My Twitter is Santia, which is Santia underscore deck, DECK. And my Snapchat is trackbaby001 as well. Facebook is Queen of Abs. And then if you want to just check out everything that I'm doing and keep yourself updated on what I'm doing, you can go to my website, which is queenofabs.com.
Brilliant. I'm actually looking, you've got a video here of you going up against a heavy bag and you're absolutely beating the shit out of it. So don't think I'd like to come up against you in the street. Santia, thanks very much for taking time out. Your sounds like you have a very, very busy schedule. So we really appreciate you coming on. Sometimes we like to spread our wings a little bit and not just talk about vanilla NFL stuff. We really like to talk about other causes. In this case, you've got several, which is empowering women in NFL and other sports, and also the charity causes that you're associated with as well. So again, thanks very much for coming on to Paddy Pigskin to chat to myself and Barry this week. Much appreciated.
Oh no, thank you guys so much.
It's draft day, Barry. Are you ready to go?
Super pumped. We finally got the leagues up and we're actually doing the drafts at the same time for the two different leagues.
And you are, in your league, you have the number 2 overall pick.
I do. Very excited for it. That means I'm getting one of Todd Gurley or David Johnson.
Okay. I'm in a different spot. I'm kind of halfway. I'm number 9 overall. So the people that are in our leagues will know there's 14 people in each division,
which is absurd.
Yeah. So you're going to have to get some deep sleepers there. So we'll have slightly different tactics based on where we are. So with the number 2 overall pick, you said you're probably going to go Gurley or David Johnson.
Well, yeah, I think this agrees with the philosophy that we both agree on, which is like that first overall pick, especially a standard league, you want to go for just a top tier running back because they do fall off so quickly, whereas wide receivers, you can find value later.
Mm.
So when you have that top overall pick there and you're sitting there saying, all right, the top 4 overall right now are Le'Veon, Gurley, Zeke, and David Johnson, you're like, I need to get one of those if I'm in that range, because if not, you're just missing out on a lot of production.
Yeah. And we spoke about this earlier on. There's no real slam dunk running back. You know, traditionally, there's always one. He's a banker. And, you know, we said last year, poor Jair took David Johnson and he went down almost straight away. But this year, there just seems to be something about all of these guys.
Well, and there's a lot of issues here. You have Le'Veon Bell there and you're saying, all right, he's clearly leaving the Steelers after this year. So one, does he try to like sandbag it to say, I want to stay healthy, or do the Steelers run him into the ground, which would be great for fantasy, bad for him. Gurley, you're sitting there saying he had a huge year last year. There has to be some natural regression. Zeke, the O-line is going down by the day right now.
Yeah,
Zach Martin,
they're really beat,
which is horrible.
Yeah.
David Johnson coming back, but rookie quarterback, or Sam Bradford, how's that going to look? Antonio Brown's a wide receiver. He's great, but if Ben falls off a cliff, you know, naturally, so does he. Kamara had an insane year, but no one has ever been able to replicate 6 yards per carry in back-to-back in 2 seasons of their career ever. There's been 5 guys to ever do it, and none of them have ever done it a second time.
Yeah.
So naturally, efficiency goes down. Does he have volume to compensate? Saquon, a million question marks, just like any rookie, right?
And it's interesting, NFL.com here have him ranked as the 7th overall player in offense, which is...
Well,
interesting.
So for a second on this, I think that's probably fair, because I think we realize this a lot when we talk about fantasy, is that so much of this is about how teams are going to use guys. And I think that regardless of if he turns out to be a very good player or not, I think the Giants are going to use him a lot this year. If at anything, like obviously if he's great, you use him a lot for good reasons. But if anything, just almost justify why you got him. You want to use him a lot. You want him to get good yards, good stats, good touchdowns.
I agree to a certain extent, but the Giants' O-line haven't really shown anything to justify, you know, like traditionally the Giants' O-line has been quite poor. If it was like the Cowboys' offensive line or like the Titans' offensive line, I'd be like, all right, 7th overall offensive projection is pretty, you know, that's pretty justifiable. But when the Giants' O-line has been shit, and even like last night they played against the Jets, and I think I sent you a screenshot. I was like, Giants' rushing game looks good.
And it was like
they had 1 yard.
8 yards.
And like that's still a bit of a concern, because as you know, in game 3 of the preseason, the starters are in there for the bulk of the first half.
I know.
So if they're only able to generate 1 fucking yard total on the ground, that's a little bit worrying. But
I know. I think a reflection there is also about volume, though, is that there's not 10 guys you can point to in the league to say they really have guaranteed volume as a running back.
True.
And Saquon's one of them right now.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of if he deserves it right now or not, just by we need to show it, we need to see if this works.
Mm.
That's how they're going to use him.
So traditionally, everybody has their own strategy. What's your strategy as you get ready for your 2018 draft?
Yeah, so I think to do a draft well, you need to have one position that you kind of punt on, in a sense that, like, I'm going to pick a guy late,
yeah,
and that's going to work. I've won a couple of leagues by taking quarterbacks late, where you say these first 7, 8 rounds are just wide receivers, running backs, loading up on those, and I'll figure the other stuff out later.
Yeah, yeah.
I will probably say if a pick comes around and a great QB's there and it's just like it so happened that they fell a little bit to me, I'm happily take them. I took Deshaun Watson in a league this year in the fifth round because he was supposed to be picked in the first like three or four rounds, fell to me at the end of the fifth, and I was like, yeah.
So your war room, in your war room, it's best player available sometimes.
For quarterback, yes. Yeah. Typically, it's wide receiver, running back, and whatever makes sense for the first seven rounds. Usually, I'll punt on tight end. That's like my big thing, and I'll usually put them off to like the 13th round, where yep. I end up with guys like Eric Ebron right now on the Colts, OJ Howard on the Bucks, where they could have good years, but frankly, the spread between, unless you pick a top three tight end, that spread between the rest of them is so small.
Yeah, and I think even the tiers, like the rankings at the moment, they have basically Gronk on his own. They have Kelce and Ertz seem to be 2 and 3 in the rankings I looked at, and then you've got the rest of the tiers pretty much. So there is, like you said, those top three, Gronk, Kelce, Ertz, and then everybody else.
And to that point, when you're picking your quality position, so your wide receivers, your running backs, your QBs, what are the things you're looking at when you're kind of picking them?
Well, in ours, you know, some people have said, why aren't we doing PPR? But this is just standard. We've always done this. So you want, you know, that guy that's going to be pounding the rock consistently.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting those points per reception. Where if you are in a PPR league, you'd be looking at someone like Christian McCaffrey early or one of those pass catching backs.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm just looking for those downhill runners that are just going to, behind a decent O-line. I mean, you know, you can't be picking a running back that has a shite O-line in front of him. He's just not going to get the yards. So traditionally, I've always stacked up on running backs because they're the ones that go down so much. As we saw last year, like Johnson, Cook were gone, and poor Jer had them on the same team. They were gone in the first couple of weeks, you know.
Yeah.
So you just have to have a decent stable of running backs because of the wear and tear of the position. I do stack up on them a little bit early on. And in my strategy, I have a quarterback going a little bit earlier. But that's assuming in your situation, if he's the best player available,
mm-hmm.
I'll take him.
Yeah, you're not going to reach in the fourth round just because I need a quarterback.
Exactly,
right,
yeah.
So the interesting part there, too, is like I think quarterback is such an interesting, because there's a real divide, if you ever look at the stats of these guys, of first 12 weeks versus weeks 13 to 16, which is really, you know, your bread and butter time for fantasy. Because it's great if they do well early, but you want them to do well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is being picked second overall for quarterbacks right now. Last three straight years, if you look at it, he's been top 5 in points in the first 12 weeks and top 15 to 20 weeks 13 to 16. Whether that's the offense scaling back, them running it more, just them saying, hey, Tom, let's just stay healthy. Whatever it is, the points drop off. Last
Interesting.
Year, fourth in points, then 20th in points. And that kills you.
Yeah.
By comparison, Blake Bortles.
Especially when you're coming into the playoffs. Like, exactly. If you have him in there, you're fucking screwed.
No, exactly. So what I try to do a lot too when I look at these, it's probably more for running backs and wide receivers than quarterbacks, but I try to look at what's that schedule look like in weeks 13 to 16 also. So and not in a way that I'll ever prioritize a guy over another, but if I'm ever like in that, oh, I like these two guys, but one guy plays, and now it would be like not Seattle, but like the Rams defense and he's a running back versus playing the Bucks. I'm like, oh, that's a more favorable matchup. So if I think they're equivalent players, I'd rather have the guy who has an easier schedule towards the end, because it just means they'll have bigger weeks in the playoffs.
You see, you have a very deep strategy there. You know, before I moved here, I was playing fantasy with predominantly Irish guys. And fantasy football is still relatively new in Ireland. Like, as we'll talk about soon, you know, daily fantasy has only launched in Ireland last year. So the concept of fantasy football is still in its infancy. So when you talk about these strategies, like, that's very deep and well thought out strategy. In, you know, amongst kind of Irish players, it's sometimes you'll just, you know, not to tire everyone with the same brush, but they'll pick guys they like, and they won't think about strength of schedule, and sometimes that can cost them. So I guess the more you play, and just, I guess, living here, you're just immersed in football all the time, the stats and the numbers. Yeah. It definitely helps planning forward.
I will definitely caution that, like, while I'm definitely more stat focused on it, but as you know, I also just have a very clear problem when it comes to fantasy football, that I just do too many leagues.
Well, you're an MIT guy and I'm a science guy, so if we weren't immersed in stats, there'd be something wrong there.
I know,
number crunchers, you know?
Yeah, you go to what you love, right?
It definitely helps, like, when it's coming into something like this, kind of, you know, just weighing stuff up, if it's a numbers equation, it definitely helps kind of having that eye and head for numbers.
100%. Last fun question before we start.
Yeah.
How early would you ever draft a defense or a kicker? Let's call this 15 rounds.
in the other league I'm in, we actually do individual defensive players. And it's fucking great because if I've probably spoken about this story before, but a few years ago, it was the semi-finals of our playoffs, and it was the Monday night game. You may remember this play. Falcons were playing in Candlestick Park. I think it was the last game, and I was down. I went to bed because I was still living in there. It was like 1 a.m. I was down like 8 points or something. The other guy had Vernon Davis and Ahmad Brooks. All I had was Bowman. Bowman makes that play in the last 2 minutes where he brought it back. I got in by 2 points. So I loved IDPs. When it comes to single defense, like way, way down, unless there's a real stud defense there, like, you know, whatever. How many rounds we got? 15 rounds in this? Yep. Like if there's something there, maybe 12 or 13, I'll take them.
That's totally fair. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing because I think people like to jump early, especially on the defenses that were really hot the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting trend that I heard when I was looking at, I heard this from one person I looked up online, and it's true. If you look in the last 10 years of defenses who broke 150 points, which is like a really elite level.
Yeah.
So last year, it was only the Rams and the Jags who did this.
So that's like, you're talking 10 points a game. You're talking a few sacks and maybe an int with one of them being a pick six.
Yeah. Over the past 10 years, no defense who's broken 150 has done it again the next year.
Interesting.
To a point where like you want to jump early on these guys because you're like, oh, if I get Jacksonville in the eighth round, I'm at a huge advantage. Maybe not.
It'd be hard for me if I took Jacksonville because they're playing the Giants in week one.
You can look over that for the other 15 weeks.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll just bench them for week one. We have a few more minutes to prepare and go for a piss break or drink some coffee before we get into it. So we'll do our draft and we'll check back in a minute or two on this episode. Real time, it's probably going to be an hour or whatever. So good luck and may the best men in both leagues win.
Hail to the commissioners.
All right, Barry, that's our draft over. How'd you feel about your performance there?
It started off a little rockier than I was hoping. I definitely panicked with the number two pick. And like I was saying before, I was like, oh, it's going to be Gurley or David Johnson. Gurley got taken, and all of a sudden I freak out and say, do I want David Johnson? He's coming back from a wrist injury. So I took Le'Veon Bell. Can't say I'm getting like super sad about that, but obviously if the things turn out this year where he decides to kind of half-ass it or wants to stay healthy for it, then yeah, obviously huge mistake there by me. And then had to wait until pick 27 to do anything after that. So it was a bit of a while. How do you feel about the start of it?
I was picking number 9. I went with Melvin Gordon. I felt was the best available. I was going to take a running back either way. He was the best available running back I felt at that position, so I took him. It got a little bit frustrating. I'm not going to name no names, but some fucking wanker that was a couple of spots ahead of me kept taking the player every time.
I heard him say this about 5 or 6 times during this draft. Like, oh my God, again!
Lots of different course words were used. Let's go through our, well,
starting.
Yeah, probably going to be our starting lineups for week one. So you go ahead first.
So I definitely stuck to some of my ideas here, which is I waited a while for a quarterback. I waited forever for a tight end. So I got Phillip Rivers in the 10th round, I want to say. Then it's Le'Veon Bell with Derrick Henry, and then like one of Carlos Hyde or Jamal Williams as a flex. And then Stephon Diggs and Alshon Jeffrey as the wide receivers with Chris Hogan, who probably will have a good, like, better start without Edelman there. Tight end, it was very late, O.J. Howard for the Bucs. I have no faith in this working at all. I don't know who's the real starting tight end in Tampa at this point, and I don't think anyone does. So I kind of just took a flyer there. You can always make that work during the season.
Yep.
Kicker for Robbie Gould from 49ers, and then defense, Ravens. They've led the league in interceptions for the last 2 straight years.
Okay. I went with a bit of a risky one. Kirk Cousins, a new team.
It can work out, though. Like, you know, there's a floor there where that.
Yeah,
like, you feel,
I mean, he's surrounded by good players. Like,
but
he
has an upside on that backup.
Yeah. I took Mahomes because, again, surrounded by talent, fucking cannon of an arm. I can see him getting a few bombs to Tyreek Hill where he just says.
Or Watkins.
He's just going to say, you know what? I'm just going to fucking throw it as far as I can and
see
let you run after.
Get it. Yeah.
And Tyreek Hill is probably one of those guys that will get it more often than not. So I have Cousins and Mahomes. Took Melvin Gordon, as I said. My other running back, Devontae Freeman for the Falcons. I'm probably going to use Jamal Williams like you in the flex spot. Wide receivers, my starters are going to be Juju. He had a great year last year as a rookie. I think with him and AB, I think they're a really good tandem, probably one of the best in the league.
I think Juju's going to have a good year this year, so I think it's a great pick.
I fucked up. I took Allen Robinson, which was an auto pick. I just lost track of time, but I have said that I like where the Chicago Bears offense is going. I just want to see that he's able to come back after the ACL.
One of the more fortunate auto draft picks I've seen.
Absolutely,
in a while.
Yeah. And my tight end, stacked them with my quarterback, Kyle Rudolph. I've picked him actually a fair few times over the years. He's quite solid. Kicker, Graham Gano for the Panthers. And defense, I was going to go with the Ravens, but again, picked two spots ahead of me, so I went with the Broncos. I think Chubb and Miller can pile up the sacks there. I just don't know how they are in the back end because they've traded away a few guys. But that's my team. And you submitted our teams to, what's the name of the website?
So it's called footballguys.com. So they do a like rate my fantasy team. They do it instantly. They have their own ranking. You enter in your team. You enter in name by name. You set your league settings, how many teams there are, what the point distributions are, and then just say rate my team.
So we have now, just for the record, I haven't seen any of this, so I don't know.
Yeah, so
this
I pulled this up, so I'm just going to read the quick overview.
And okay.
So there are a couple of cool things. They tell you their overall thoughts between quarterback, wide receiver, and running back, what you did right or wrong in their eyes.
Yeah.
And then with great, good, or average season management of your team, what percent chance you have of making the playoffs given that many teams on average. So would you like to start with yours or mine?
You go first.
Let's do it. So their review of this is old school. Make no mistake about it, this team's strength is at the running back position, and we think it'll be the league favorite or very close to it. Somewhere, Marshall Faulk is smiling.
Nice.
They told me that I actually have slightly below average quarterbacks and receivers, but they say it can manage it well. With great in-season management, they think I have about an 85% chance of making the playoffs.
Nice.
With average, they think it drops to about 67.
They wish high floor.
I know. And they wish best of luck, and that all weeks are like my week 3 of 2017 when Stephon Diggs had 173 yards and 2 TDs. Carlos Hyde had 94 combined yards and 2 TDs. Blake Bortles had 250 passing yards, 4 TDs. And Hogan had 68 receiving yards and 2 TDs.
That's really good analysis that
they
were able to.
Thing they pull from it.
Yeah.
I love when they do that.
That's fantastic. Okay.
And they say overall, kicker and defense should be good enough to stream for most of the year to where like you can keep the guys you have.
Yep.
Your team, well, before I say, what are your thoughts? What do you think you got right or wrong?
You know the way you just have a feeling sometimes, you're like, I just like this team. I didn't really get that. I didn't make it move for me downstairs, you know. It was just like, there was a few questionable decisions, mainly out of time. My time management was probably not that great. Like, I took Richardson, forgetting that he's not with the Seahawks anymore. He's with the fucking Redskins. So there's one or two.
Like, but that's like your 15th round pick. Like,
yeah,
those are ones where like you can miss that and realistically the season still works.
That's true. I'm hesitant to say that it's a good review. So we'll leave it at that. So you can tell me what it is.
They actually say that they think you're looking good at quarterback and running back. So despite a slightly below average receiver core, they think you
Which I did say, I think at the time 100%. I was like, my receivers are... Okay.
Yeah, but they think you have about a 90% chance of making the playoffs with great management and 80 with average management. So actually, even a better chance than
Jesus.
I have.
So they high floor and a high ceiling.
Yep.
I'll take
they
that.
They think it's very good. And they wish that all of your weeks are like week 8 of 2017 when Juju had 193 yards and a touchdown, Paul Richardson 105 yards, 2 TDs, Melvin Gordon 140 in a TD, and Isaiah Crowell 120 in a TD.
Interesting that they're basing like... They're saying, I hope you have a week 8 like last year, and it's based off the receivers, given that my overall performance in drafting receivers is not considered great, but I'll take it.
I think you know, looking at your team, that that's a boomer bust receiver core.
Yeah,
either
yeah.
Break off big plays, Kenny Stills gets a touchdown, Juju does something, things like that, or they're very much like a weird floor. So
and I did read when I was kind of researching sleepers, a couple of people had Paul Richardson on the radar as a potential sleeper.
Oh,
so 100%. there was some element of method to the madness there.
Yeah.
It wasn't just picking something out of my arse and saying,
the one
I'm
thing
take
they
it.
Do feel is that while Graham Gano is one that they think you can keep for the year, they do think you're going to want to switch around with the Broncos defense depending on that schedule. So they actually give you a couple different interesting pairings.
Okay.
You can play with the Seahawks, with the Patriots, or with the Bears and actually get a very good 16-game schedule.
Nice. That's really good analysis. Can you, because we're going to put this episode out soon. What's the name of the website for people to upload their...
Yep. So it's footballguys.com. And if you literally just type in rate my fantasy football team into Google, they're the first one that comes up.
Brilliant. We're not getting paid by saying this. This is just a website
purely,
you came along with.
Purely just a fun one I've been using for a few years.
it's one of those friend of a friend created it kind of places, and I really just love the analysis they give.
Gotcha. Right, I think we'll leave it at that for episode 39. Barry, thanks very much for coming in and sharing your draft strategy and our draft recaps. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, no, it was a blast to do all this. It's a really fun episode, honestly, going back to the conversation with Santia, going to the draft with us. So it really does kind of show like a wide range of, you know, how we are interested in the sport. So it's been fun.
Yeah. So as well as checking out Santia's social media, check out ours. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the usual spots. At Paddy Pigskin is where you can find us. And also wherever you're listening to us. So we are on, where are we? We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on SoundCloud and all those other crazy apps that people listen to us. We always say this, if you want to review us and give us, you know, a couple of comments about how we're doing, we always appreciate that feedback. So that will do it for episode 39 of Paddy Pigskin. Tune in next time where, as always, we will have less slant and more slantcha. Take care. Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, every motherfucking state when we touch down. Go right from the plane to the rain when we touch down. On a private plane, getting brain till we touch down. Hey. There ain't no way to keep them quiet with T.I. and Shady, baby. We bout to inside a ride when we touch down. Welcome to the Midwest, yes, where them Detroit players ball like you have no idea. The Moors here got the whole place looking like it's candy painted, ain't it? Like we left the kids at home and just let them loose with the crayons. Fuck, I just hit a jogger. People looking like Frogger, they're hopping out of the way whenever they see Marshall's car coming. The kids painted my windows with black permanent marker and left the rest of the car cover colored like swirl pops. And I got the bass thumping, but I'm bound to bump into something. Kids are flying through the air looking like they're clumping. The way they're tumbling, I gotta do something. But as soon as I hit the car wash to get the tar, they're just right back at it tomorrow. They're like, Dad, this is Ian, so you with the trend. This is for the PMs, listening to memes. Nail polish on the rims, and that was custom chrome. But I gotta go do a show, so go on with your bad selves. Just have it back to normal when I touch down.
Midwest, we okay. Everybody know them Southern boys love that bass.
Atlanta go bananas, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee. Every motherfucking state when we touch down.
Go right from the plane to the rain when we
touch down.
On a private plane, getting brain till we
touch down. Hey. There ain't no way to keep them quiet with T.I. and Shady, baby. Hey. We bout to inside a ride when we touch
from
down.
From my arrival to my departure guarantee, I put the D-I-C-K in somebody's daughter. Hey, I still have my way with the ladies. Way across the water, flew to Paris from Haiti. Just some shit that I thought of, it's ironic. Got a shit that we vomit, make us iconic. A threat to corporate America, they why they running from it. How could they be so ignorant? Look what hip-hop done. It's allowed us to run a business, legitimated our monies. Got us out of the ghettos and relocated our mommies. I made it all the way here, ain't no way you taking it from
so
me.
So excuse me, Oprah, honey, I'm sorry, really, I promise.
But niggas, bitches, and hoes, you exist, I'm just being honest. What's that, am I being punished? Why are you so astonished? Nah, I ain't got a degree, just intelligence and abundance. So you ain't gotta like me, I know millions of folk who let me. You can tell how they yelling and screaming and waiting for me when I tear it down.
In the Midwest, we okay. Everybody know them Southern boys love that bass. Atlanta go bananas, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee. Every motherfucking state when we touch down.
Go right from the plane to the rain.
When we touch down.
On a private plane, getting brain till we
touch down. Hey. There ain't no way to keep them quiet with T.I. and Shady, baby. Hey. We bout to inside a ride when we touch down.